Part 8 is an example of a contamination incident, and it's intended to integrate the information presented in the previous seven parts of this presentation. I want to note also that there are other examples that are provided in the appendix to this presentation that we won't go over in the audio portion of this this webcast. Moving on to slide 126, to launch the example. In this case, we're considering cyanide, and here are the basic facts and assumptions about this incident. First, it's triggered by a sensor located in the distribution system where a dramatic drop in chlorine residual is observed. Presumably, there is a response, and there's preliminary testing to confirm the presence of cyanide in the drinking water system. Further along in the response, through intensive sampling and analysis, we would have determined that there are positive samples for cyanide a half a mile upstream at the distribution system pump station and up to a mile downstream that's close to a residential area. Furthermore, through the sampling and analysis effort, it was determined that the hydrogen cyanide concentration in the water system was 40 milligrams per liter. The flow of water, the velocity of water through the system, is approximately 10 feet per second. And the symptoms reported by public health officials include difficulty breathing, flushed skin, nausea, and vomiting, all of which are consistent with cyanide poisoning. Moving on to slide 127. There are critical questions we need to answer to deal with this incident. First, what methods are available, both field testing and laboratory methods, to measure cyanide? And furthermore, what are the reliability of those various methods, and what are the performance characteristics of those methods? Next, are the detected levels of cyanide high enough to pose a threat to public health? We're concerned initially with the acute threat, but we also need to consider in the back of our minds the chronic, potential chronic effects. Even though we don't expect exposure to be long-term, there may be doses that are subacute, which still over a short duration may have some impact on the health. That question needs to be answered. We also need to determine which routes of exposure are going to pose a threat to customers with the cyanide contamination of the water system. We need information on the fate and transport of cyanide through a drinking water distribution system. We need to know the anticipated residence time of the contaminant throughout the system. We'd like to evaluate the availability of treatment technologies that might be able to remove or neutralize cyanide. And finally, we need to be cognizant that there may be reaction products of cyanide in the finished drinking water system. And if there are, we need to understand the potential health effects associated with those degradation products or treatment byproducts. Moving on to slide 128. The following sources of information were used to evaluate cyanide, the properties of cyanide. They include the material safety data sheet, information from the National Institutes of Health ToxNet database, specifically the Hazardous Substance Data Bank component of the ToxNet cluster, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and NIOSH Emergency Response Cards, and finally, subject matter experts from the United States Environmental Protection Agency, both the Water Security Division and the National Homeland Security Research Center. Moving on to slide 129, considering the first source, the MSDS sheet, or MSDS. Sorry, let's start that over. Moving on to slide 129. Information from the first source, the material safety data sheet for cyanide. What we find from that sheet, first off, some basic properties, the molecular weight of the compound, the vapor pressure, and the boiling point, things that may not be readily of use, but something to track as that information may become important later in the analysis or later in the response. It should be noted, too, that this is an MSDS for hydrogen cyanide, which is appropriate since cyanide, as we'll see later, will exist primarily as aqueous hydrogen cyanide in a water system. There's also information about the health effects. We learned that it's a rapid-acting poison. It prevents the cells of the body from using oxygen, and that exposure routes of potential concern include the three that we'd expect: inhalation, ingestion, and dermal absorption. Continuing on to slide 130 with the MSDS, we have a number of toxicity numbers, including LC values, no observable adverse effect levels, reference doses, and one LD50. However, we need to keep in mind as we evaluate this information that what we have here is actually a mix. We have different endpoints. We have some that are focused on the lethal endpoints, such as the LCs and LDs, whereas we have others that are focused on the lower end of the spectrum, concentrations at which no adverse effects would occur. So this needs to be considered as we evaluate these different toxicity data. Furthermore, we're talking about different exposure routes. We have some for ingestion, some for inhalation, and some for dermal exposure. We also have different units, and it might be useful at this point to convert all the values into concentrations, which the reference dose is expressed in. That would be milligrams per liter in solution. So we take this information and we track it. However, we don't feel we yet have enough information to complete our consequence analysis, so we consult the next source. Moving to slide 131, we now move on to the Hazardous Substance Data Bank. So what we do is we go to the ToxNet website, select the HSDB database, and search on cyanide and look at the full record. Here we get information on some basic properties such as solubility. We learn that it is very soluble in water and also stable. We also learn that it would form an equilibrium between the cyanide ion and hydrogen cyanide, which is normally a gas, but which can be dissolved into water. Also has some other information which may not be particularly useful, such that as it's unstable when heated and when in contact with alkaline materials. But again, we record this information, not, you know, realizing that it may become relevant later on in the response. Continuing on with the HSDB record on slide 132, we learn that the persistence of the contaminant depends on whether it's in an open or closed system. In an open system, under typical water pH values, really anything, any pH value below 7 to 8, you'll have most of the cyanide will be present as hydrogen cyanide, which is very volatile. So in an open system, it would tend to degasify and dissipate quickly into the atmosphere. However, in a closed system, such as a pressurized pipe, we'd expect it to remain in solution and not go anywhere. In terms of reactivity, we find out from the HSDB that it can react with chlorine to form cyanogen chloride, which, you know, we could go on then and search on cyanogen chloride. If we did so, we would find out that it is also a very toxic compound in and of itself. So, you know, our concern does not end once the cyanide has reacted with chlorine. In fact, it just becomes more complicated. We also find out that cyanide reactions are very sensitive to pH values. Under the right conditions, chlorine can react with cyanide to destroy the compound. But under the wrong conditions, it can form cyanogen chloride. We also have some tangential information, such that as it may react violently with strong mineral acids, and it may polymerize when heated to form a potentially explosive solid. It's unlikely that either of those conditions would be encountered in a response to a drinking water situation, but you never know. Now, moving on to slide 133, continuing with information from the Hazardous Substance Data Bank, There's some information about the odor being bitter almond for cyanide or pepper-like for cyanogen chloride. However, we find out that not all the population is capable of detecting cyanide via the odor. We confirm other information about the chemical physical properties that we got from the MSDS and pick up some other ones like the volatilization half-life, the octanol water partition coefficient, the Henry's law constant, and the pKa. The pKa, which for hydrogen cyanide is 9.2, is how we determine whether or not the cyanide in the solution will exist mostly as cyanide ion, or mostly as dissolved hydrogen cyanide. And since it's a relatively high pKa, we can conclude that at pH values typical of drinking water, which is usually below a pH of 8, that most of the cyanide would exist as aqueous hydrogen cyanide. Moving on to slide 134, again continuing with the record from the HSDB, we have more toxicity data. Now we have information about inhalational exposure using different models, a rat animal model and dog animal model. We also have some information about subcutaneous, intraperitoneal, intramuscular, and intravenous routes of exposure. Now those latter routes of exposure are probably not all that relevant to a drinking water situation, but the inhalational routes are. One thing that I failed to mention earlier is that since the routes of exposure do include inhalation due to the ability of hydrogen cyanide gas to volatilize from a water stream, once you depressurize it, as in opening a shower nozzle or opening a faucet, hydrogen gas could volatilize and present an opportunity for inhalational exposure. So we do need to be concerned about these toxicity endpoints. However, on the HSDB website, we did not find any information about the LD50 for the ingestion of cyanide. Furthermore, we observed that some of the information about inhalational exposure is in conflict with the information found on the MSDS. This is a theme that's common. If you look hard enough for toxicity data, chances are you will find conflicting data. And the challenge is reconciling this information and using the most reliable toxicity data that you can to make an informed decision. Moving on to slide 135. Again, we have some other toxicity endpoints from the HSDB, such as a no observable adverse effect level for both cyanide as cyanide and as hydrogen cyanide. We have more information on the adverse health effects that pretty much confirm the information we already gathered from the MSDS. But one new piece of information that's important is that we learn that the human body is able to detoxify cyanide. This is important. It can furthermore can rapidly detoxify cyanide. So if you take a sip of water, go away for half an hour or an hour and come back and take another drink of water, that first dose you got was probably already detoxified by your body. So to get a toxic dose, it has to pretty much be all in one exposure period over a relatively short time period. So we take all this information again and compile it in our contaminant information, our contaminant characterization worksheet. Moving on to slide 136, we consult some other sources. We go to the CDC website, but have no luck in finding a LD50 value for ingestion. So next we turn to subject matter experts, in this case at the Environmental Protection Agency. And here we confirm or verify that the ingestion LD50 for cyanide is about 1.5 milligrams per kilogram. So this is an important value. It drives the consequence analysis for the ingestion route of exposure. Finally, we also consulted the NIOSH emergency response cards for hydrogen cyanide for additional health effects information. Moving on to slide 137. So how do we pull all this information together and how do we use it? Obviously, the health effects information is critically important to our consequence analysis. we need to determine the worst case exposure route and need to, and also this would be needed to prepare for medical responses. The toxicity information is important because it determines, again, the consequences of exposure. For the concentrations that were detected in the water system, the solubility, fate, and transport information were important for determining, not only determining the spread of the contaminant through the system, but determining how we're ultimately going to remedy the situation or treat the water. And the same is true for the treatability information. Moving on to slide 138. We did track a lot of other physiochemical properties, such as Henry's law coefficients or octanol water partition coefficients. While we didn't use this in this short exercise, it's important to keep tracking it and to keep a complete record, because down the road, as you continue down the response path, that information may become important. So it's good to have it at one's fingertips. Some of the physiochemical properties that we looked at included solubility, again confirming that it was soluble and stable in water, important for the fate and transport analysis. Moving on to slide 139, we did get information about the volatilization half-life of hydrogen cyanide, and we saw that in an open water system, it would readily volatilize from the water surface, so we wouldn't expect it to persist very long in an open water body. And we may make the case that in some storage tanks within a distribution system that have an open water surface, hydrogen cyanide may quickly, or within a matter of days, volatilize, and thus minimizing the hazard, assuming that there's no one there to be exposed to the volatilizing hydrogen cyanide gas. However, in a closed system, we would expect the hydrogen cyanide to persist. Furthermore, there is potential, although it's somewhat remote, that you could get enough hydrogen cyanide gas in a confined air pocket within a distribution system where it could pose an explosive hazard. But the more likely scenario is probably the risk upon depressurization. That is, you could even have a supersaturated situation where you have a lot of hydrogen cyanide, and once you depressurize the system by opening a faucet, a relatively large dose of hydrogen cyanide could be experienced, especially in a confined area such as a shower stall within a bathroom. We also gathered information on reactivity. The important observation here was the reactivity of cyanide with chlorine and the fact that it can form cyanogen chloride, which itself is a highly toxic compound. Moving on to slide 140, we obtained information about the octanol water partition coefficient, and based on this data, determined that the hydrogen cyanide would not be expected to adsorb onto suspended solids or sediment in a water body. This is important for a couple reasons. First, it's important for fate and transport. We do not expect adsorption to be an important fate and transport process. It also impacts remediation. We would not expect it to adsorb onto pipe walls and pipe material, so the remediation effort of removing the cyanide would not have to consider that. Also, we might use this to deduce that certain adsorptive treatment processes may not be that effective for remediation. The Henry's law coefficient, or constant, is relatively high. Again, just confirming that volatilization would be an important fate and transport process if there was an open water surface. And we do have some information about the density of hydrogen cyanide as a gas, just noting that since the hydrogen cyanide itself is less dense than air, it would tend to rise, which, you know, is important in determining the risk in confined spaces due to degassing of hydrogen cyanide from a water body. Moving on to slide 141, continuing the use of the information, the health and toxicity information that was selected for final consequence analysis includes the health effects descriptions, particularly those from the NIOSH emergency response cards and the CDC bioterrorism website, which provided the most succinct descriptions of the adverse health effects. But again, as noted, the toxicity values collected varied widely, and we did have to consider all three exposure routes. In this case, we focused on the lowest values, or most conservative values, since all of the information was collected from relatively reputable and reliable resources. Looking at the ingestion route of exposure, the LD50 was relatively low at 1.5 milligrams per kilogram. And again, since this was the lowest value among all the values, it was selected for consequence analysis. Moving on to slide 142, in addition to these contaminant properties, we need to consider any other relevant information about the incident that may inform that analysis, such as breaches in security, additional operational information, and any information about the affected population. Moving on to slide 143 and into consequence analysis. So first off, looking at the toxicity information. So we have an LD50 value of 1.5 milligrams per kilogram. So you can use a calculation such as that demonstrated by Stanley States in part 2 of this presentation to convert that LD50 into a concentration in water. So using assumptions of an infant drinking a 4-ounce bottle of water or formula prepared with that water, a concentration of 50 milligrams per liter could result in death of that infant. So we might use that as our benchmark for a critical concentration. Now, going back to the basic assumptions of this exercise, cyanide concentration that we actually determined was only 40 milligrams per liter, which does not exceed, which is less than the 50 milligram per liter concentration that has been established as our acute benchmark. So, in some sense, we're out of the clear for the acute threat, but we still need to consider that cyanide itself may have adverse health effects that are sublethal that may result from short-term exposures. So, further information would have to be gathered on the other health effects, the subacute and other health effects that may result from a relatively short exposure period. Moving on to slide 144, continuing with consequence analysis, estimating the exposed population. So we know a little bit about the hydraulics of the system. We know the average velocity in this one particular pipe is 10 feet per second, which is about 7 miles per hour. Since we could look at the flow of water through the system, and since our monitoring effort determined that we only found the cyanide 1 mile downstream, we conclude that we found the contamination incident relatively quickly after occurrence. This is probably, under this scenario, is probably largely due to the fact that we picked it up with a trigger of no observable chlorine residual in the distribution system at that point. So as soon as the cyanide hit that location where that chlorine residual monitor was stationed and we got that zero reading, that allowed us to respond quickly and confirm that cyanide was present. Due to this, we've determined that only 200 homes were affected before we could isolate this portion of the system. So we've managed to minimize the potential consequences by containment. Looking at the health consequences, we know that hydrogen cyanide, again, is important via all the exposure routes. It's due to inhalation as well as ingestion and thermal exposure. So we need to restrict all uses of the water. Furthermore, it's a fast-acting poison. So anyone who is exposed needs to be treated very quickly. This is important for the medical prong of the response. Again, we confirm that cyanide exposure is not contagious. However, secondary contamination can still occur due to contaminated clothing or skin, and there can even be sort of an off-gassing vapor from people who have been contaminated with cyanide. So there is a potential risk to responders, so they will need to take precautions. moving on to slide 145, so where does this consequence analysis lead us? It has to lead us to response decisions. And the first and foremost is to protect public health through some sort of emergency action. In this case, that was containment of the affected area of the distribution system, evacuation of the premises. This was done as precaution due to the risk of off-gassing of hydrogen cyanide vapor in the area. And the medical response would be to immediately treat the exposed victims. And since we now know it's cyanide, medical treatment can be targeted towards that particular contaminant and thus can be optimized. However, our response is not over. We need to remediate the drinking water system. In this case, the solution was to flush the system to a holding tank for subsequent treatment. The most likely treatment would be chlorination at elevated pHs to mineralize the cyanide, converting it to harmless compounds. That concludes part 8 of this presentation. Next, in part 9, we'll briefly go over a few action items and discuss